Well, good morning, ladies and gents. As you can probably tell, I'm a little under the weather. So I'm going to get a chair today because I've got a nasty head cold and it sometimes makes me feel a little bit woozy. So I'm going to stay seated. And also, if I'm stood up, I can get a little bit excited, which makes me speak louder. And I don't have much of a voice to speak louder. So if you want to hear the louder version, you have to come to the third service when I've not got any more preaching to do afterwards. And so we'll see how we go. But hopefully we will survive all three services. That's at least what you can be praying for. I was tempted to say, let's not do morning church, let's do afternoon church. Because yesterday afternoon, I could talk. Yesterday morning, I couldn't. So it was touch and go. Anyway, enough about me. We are in the middle of a sermon series called Your Best Year Ever, where we've been asking the question, how can we live our lives in 2018 for the glory of God? So far, we've looked at our personal walk with God, our relationship with God. We've looked at our marriages or our singleness. We've looked at our parenting. And we've also looked at our work life or our school life. And we've been wondering how we can grow to live out these different roles in our lives for the glory of God. And for each of these areas, we've been taking time toward the end of our messages to fill in these sheets, which are a way we've been looking at how we can realistically change in these areas. We've considered our envisioned future, which is like the destination on this journey of change we're embarking upon. This is meant to be an inspiring picture of the future if we were to grow significantly in that area. It's a picture that should motivate us and excite us about this idea of changing. Then we've considered our current reality, and these will be on, we've got a slide for these, there we go. Envision reality, envision future and current reality. And the current reality is like the starting point on this journey of change. This is meant to be an honest look at how this area of our life currently functions and how well we currently glorify God in this area or not. It should list both the positive and the negative to give us as clear a picture as possible as this area of our life. Then lastly, we've considered our specific commitments, which are like the first steps on this journey of change. These are meant to be a small number of specific things that we're going to do to begin moving from our current reality to our envisioned future. And the key to these commitments, these specific commitments, is that there's something you're actually going to do. And the reason we've been thinking specifically in these categories is not because this is some kind of self-help manual for a better life. It's because we're passionate about living our lives for the glory of God, and that doesn't happen by mistake. We want to do it intentionally. We want to put some thought into it. So we wanted to take some time at the start of 2018 to intentionally think how we can best live our lives for Jesus Christ. And we can see this as the theme of our lives in when you look at the Westminster Catechism. On the next slide, this is my edited version of the opening statement of the Westminster Catechism. And it says this, "The chief end of man is to make God look great by enjoying him forever." To make God look great is my simplified way of saying what it means to glorify God. We make God look great, not in the sense that he's not already great and we've got to do something to make him look better than he is. Rather, God is already so great and so wonderful that we want everyone to experience that and be overwhelmed by it. So we've looked at how we can make God look great by enjoying him more in our walk with him, in our marriages, in our singleness, in our parenting, and also in our work lives and schooling, and doing all those things for his glory and for his fame. But this week, we're going to be looking at a much more sensitive topic. We're looking at how we can make God look great with our money. How excited are you right now? Pastors get a bad rap talking about money. We can hear the groan of your hearts whenever the word is mentioned. But this morning, I'm unapologetically going to be talking about money because of something Jesus himself said from Matthew 6:19. The words will be on the screen. "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. You cannot serve both God and money. Those are some very conclusive words from Jesus, aren't they? But we subconsciously try to spend most of our lives proving him wrong. We think we can pursue God and also pursue money at the same time, but Jesus says we can't. But we love money, don't we? The almighty dollar is very tantalizing to us. And we, in our Western cultures, have done a great job at making money look like a great God. We've done a great job of glorifying money. We find security in money, don't we? When we have excess money, we feel we can face anything that life throws at us. But when the bank account is very low, we can feel quite insecure. We find comfort in money. When we have money, it brings us peace, but it can be the source of all kinds of worries when we don't have it. We find joy in money, or more specifically, in the things that money provides, all that glorious stuff that fills our homes. And when we don't have stuff, or at least we don't sometimes have the newest stuff, we can get very dissatisfied and lose our joy. If an alien were to come and visit our planet, they would be forgiven for thinking that the chief end of man is to glorify money by enjoying it forever. We encourage our kids to do well in school, to study hard, to do a sport so they can get that scholarship, so that you can go to a good college, so you can get a good job, not with the ultimate goal of glorifying the God of heaven, but so that we can have more of the God of money. Security, comfort, peace, and joy. Money sounds like a very appealing God to worship, doesn't it? But we all know that money cannot truly provide those things. It just gives the illusion of doing so for a short time. When we're pursuing money, we're not pursuing God. And if we're pursuing God, we won't be pursuing money. Jesus states it as simply as that. But money is a fact of life, isn't it? We need money for food, for clothing, for shelter, for transport, and all other kinds of expenses. So how can we live in a society whose primary functions center around money and the exchange of money, and yet not fall into the trap of serving money? The question I want to answer this morning is, how can we bring glory to God, or how can we enjoy God more with our money? And I want to give you the answer to this question right here at the start. We glorify God with our money when we use our money to store up eternal riches. We glorify God with our money when we use our money to store up for ourselves eternal riches. As Jesus said in that passage I read a moment ago, don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. God wants us to pursue treasure. He built us to desire treasure, but he only wants us to pursue worthwhile and everlasting treasure. The tiny trinkets of this world, even if they have a lot of zeros behind them, pale into insignificance when compared to the eternal, everlasting riches of heaven. Those are the treasures we should pursue. Those are the treasures we should be seeking our joy in. We glorify God with our money when we use our money to store up eternal riches. And I want to back this up even more with another passage from the New Testament in 1 Timothy chapter 6. And here the Apostle Paul is giving his young protege Timothy some instructions on how to teach his congregation about money. And these apply so well to us as well. So it's 1 Timothy chapter 6, starting in verse 6. Godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap, and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. So that passage is saying that our default view when it comes to our money and to our possessions should be contentment. Contentment is defined as being happy with what you've got. Not longing or planning for more, but just being satisfied with what God has already given you. Paul argues that contentment is a logical mindset for every human being because we brought nothing into this world and we will take nothing out of it. You could spend all your life pursuing more and more riches and becoming the richest person in the world, but at the end of it all, you'll end up exactly the same as the poorest of the poor, a rotting corpse in the ground. No amount of money is ever going to prevent that from happening. So Paul encourages the believers in Ephesus to be content. If we have food and clothing, he says, we'll be content with that. That right there is one of the most anti-Western culture statements in the entire Bible. If we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. All commercial industries are built on the idea of discontentment. Every TV commercial, every newspaper ad, every website pop-up banner is designed to make us discontented with what we have and make us long for more. But if we have food and clothing, we should be content with that. Wow, are those challenging words. And Paul encourages this contentment because the opposite is very dangerous. Let me read those words again. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap, and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. But naturally, we think we're the exception to those statements, don't we? I know I do. I like to think that I could pursue getting richer and not succumb to any of those temptations and traps. But I'd be really naive to think that wasn't a risk if it's written in God's word. And in case you think you're not someone who wants to get rich, then let's make sure we understand what Paul says. He's encouraging these believers to be content with food and clothing. Those who want to get rich are those who aren't content with just food and clothing. I don't know about you, but by that definition, I'm someone who definitely wants to become rich. God is warning us that there is great danger in pursuing money and the stuff that money can buy. He's not saying it's wrong to be rich. He's saying it's very dangerous to be so. Because at the very least, it can take our attention off of God and put our attention on stuff. And that is a really bad place to be. Let's continue reading, but let's skip down a few verses to verse 17. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. The main command here is to not put our hope in wealth, but to put our hope in God. That's the main thing Paul wants these believers to do. And the way they can demonstrate that their hope isn't in wealth is by living generously. He says, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. And we do those things not as some selfless act that gain us nothing. We do them to pursue riches that are truly worth pursuing, treasures in heaven that are imperishable. So we show God that our hope is in him, and we show the world that our hope is in God when we live a generous lifestyle. When we give away our wealth, we show that we're not clinging to our wealth for hope. Instead, we hold it with an open hand because our hope is in God. And when we live generously, we make God look great because our hope is in Him and we give Him all the glory. And when we do that, we will be living exactly how we were designed to live and we will experience the best year ever. So what I want us to do for the rest of our time together is I want to give you a really practical framework for how we can view our money or begin to view our money in a way that honors God. And it involves three attitudes toward our money, which are found throughout the Bible, and they're listed here in priority order. Give generously, save wisely, live appropriately. Give generously, save wisely, live appropriately. So first of all, we're called to give generously, and there's no way to get around this from the scripture. If you call yourself a follower of Christ, then your King calls you to give generously. If you call yourself a follower of Christ and you're not giving, then you're being disobedient to God, and therefore you are in sin. And often pastors are afraid to put it in such terms that are so stark as that because there's an obvious vested interest. Your generous giving pays my salary. But the reason I want to call it out so blatantly, because if not giving is sin and sin steals our joy, then why would we want to do that? I don't want you to have your true joy stolen. You may think that holding on to all your money will bring you greater joy than giving generously, but you're just believing lies. And there's no scriptural caveat attached to this call to give generously. Whether you have a six-figure income or a six-figure debt, we are called to give in accordance to our income. And I know there are many people in this room who give generously, who give regularly and give cheerfully to the ministry of this church. And I'm so thankful to God for you all. Please keep doing what you are doing. Your generosity is helping people hear about King Jesus, whether it's through this church or through organizations like the Pregnancy Care Center or others that we support. And by doing that, you're storing up for yourselves great treasure in heaven, which far outweighs any measly treasure that this world has to offer. But if you're not giving at all, or if you're only giving sporadically or irregularly, then let me encourage you with all of my heart to start giving. Become financially part of what God is doing in and through this church. Stop being a mere spectator and join us and experience greater blessing. And if for whatever reason you're uncomfortable giving it for this church, maybe this is your first time here and you're like, I'm just checking it out, I'm not opening my checkbook yet, or for whatever reason you're uncomfortable giving to this church, then I encourage you to find another Christian organization who is seeking to spread the gospel around the world who you can invest your money in. Or become a key supporter of one of the thousands of missionaries around the world who would love more prayer and financial support. But if this is your church home, if you're a regular here, I'd encourage you to give generously to the work of this church because there are so many ways that you can do that. You can give by cash or check every Sunday. You can go to fbclovis.com/give and give any time of day or night of the week. You can also text to give. You just open up your messaging app on your phone and text any numerical amount to 84321 and you'll get set up for text to give. But the only downside to these methods is that we can often forget to give our planned offering to God. I know when my beloved wife and I were first married, we used to give through checks because we wanted to feel our giving go out of our bank account. But there'd be times we forgot our checkbook or even just forgot to hand in our checks. It was tucked inside the Bible and we just forgot about it. So we decided to automate our giving. You can do that by visiting fbclovis.com and registering for a recurring gift, whether that's weekly, monthly, or however often you want. This is a fantastic way to give because it ensures that we actually give, which is great, and it helps us to plan better for ministry expenses because we know what money we can be expecting in each month. Some people think that automating your giving is less spiritual somehow. They want to feel their giving. They want to feel that check going into the offering plate or feel the money dropping in or whatever it is. But there's nothing unbiblical about automated giving. If you can automate your obedience to God, why wouldn't you, right? There's plenty of other areas to focus on being obedient in. That if you can just say, yeah, I can do that. I can be obedient to God once and it happens. And that's fantastic. And it's a great way to do it. And you also get an email every time you the giving is done. And so you know it's happened. So you're reminded that you are giving. And so it's a great way to do it. One of the other ways that you can give to the church is by considering an end-of-life gift. Some people want to leave a legacy to an organization they are passionate about in their will. And so if you're interested at all in considering that, then Nick and I have a friend who deals specifically with setting up end-of-life trusts for people to go into, to be able to give to organizations like a church or any other nonprofit, and we can get you more information about that. If you'd be interested, just talk to Nick and I. People often ask how much they should be giving. You may have heard the idea in the Old Testament of the tithe, where people were required to give 10% of their income, whether that was a financial income or a crop income, to the ministry of God. And Christians are not under any official law to give any particular amount. I know some believers see the tithe, the 10%, as a good guide. Some people who want to start giving set it as a goal, so they start giving 2% of their income for 6 months, then they increase it to 4% for 6 months, then 6% all the way till they get to 10%. Others see 10% as a good starting point and increase their giving from there. The question is not how much you have to give, but the question is how much do you get to give? Jesus said it's more blessed to give than receive. We experience greater joy and greater blessing when we give. So the question is, how much joy do you want to experience? How much joy do you want to receive? We build up for ourselves a greater treasure in heaven when we invest our money in eternity rather than in this world. So the question is, how much treasure in heaven do you want? And it's not based on an amount. It's not like millionaires who give generously have more treasure in heaven. It's proportionate to our income and, more importantly, to our heart attitude. Giving isn't something that's a burden to us. It's a source of great blessing to our lives. To believe anything else is to believe the lies of the devil. So I would love if you would give generously. And the best way to do this is just to make giving a non-negotiable in your life. If you're single, make a personal decision. If you're married, make a joint decision on how much would be generous giving for you in your current situation. Pick an amount or a percentage of your income and then just give it. Automate it and just choose to make it your number one payment each week or each month. Give generously and make it a non-negotiable in your life. Secondly, we are to save wisely. According to some research I did this week, the average American household couldn't deal with a financial emergency of more than $400. This means that if unexpected medical expenses or car breakages happen and it costs more than $400, then most Americans would either have to leave it and not deal with it, which often isn't an option, or they'd have to go into debt, more debt. We struggle to save because saving never seems attractive, does it? We have that desire for instant gratification. We want what we want, and we want it now. The idea of saving for a big purchase no longer seems reasonable when you can buy now and not pay anything for the first 3 months and have no interest for the first year. We also struggle to save because of our inability to grasp future reality. We underestimate how much we need to save and how long it's going to take us to save that amount of money. And we also struggle due to the lack of financial margin in our lives. We have too many bills, too many expenses, including debt we've accrued, and too little income to put anything apart from a few keep the change scraps into savings. But saving is a great benefit to us. We save in the short term so that if any kind of emergency happens, then we're not prevented from living our lives. And we save in the long term so that when we are no longer working, we can continue to provide ourselves. But more importantly, saving allows us to keep giving. If you save wisely, then when one of those short-term emergencies arrives, we're not prevented from giving and experience the joy and blessing that brings. And in the long term, if you save wisely, you can maybe even retire early or continue to give generously well into your retirement years, making a wide impact for Jesus. So, and after you've made that commitment to give generously, then you should set a monthly amount to save and then just make that a non-negotiable too. And once you've done those things, given generously and saved wisely, then the third attitude to master is to live appropriately. And this is the one that can be detrimental to the other two. Often we get them in reverse order, don't we? First, we spend our money on what we want and on how we want to live. Then if we have any left over, we might put a little into savings. And if anything is left, we might consider dropping a $20 bill into the offering plate. The biggest indication that I ever received that we are in the West are not good at living appropriately is in this statistic. To cure world hunger for a year, not to solve it permanently, but to feed all the hungry people in the world for a year, is estimated would cost $5 billion. $5 billion each year to cure it for a year. In 2012, I think the year was, America spent $20 billion on self-storage units to store the stuff that we can't already fit into our already large homes. It's not wrong to have a storage unit, but that's a crazy statistic, right? The average American household has over $15,000 of credit card debt and over $30,000 in car loans. That doesn't include student debt or mortgages. And yet, we buy cell phones that are worth $500. We go on vacations which cost in the thousands of dollars. We buy TVs which are a few inches bigger and a slightly better resolution than the perfectly adequate one we already have. I'm not saying any individual purchase is a sin, but the way we spend our money is a heart issue. We love money primarily because it gives us stuff. And we love stuff, don't we? Stuff just feels good, especially new stuff. It has that smell and it's lovely. But sadly, that satisfaction is only ever temporary, isn't it? The new wears off soon, and we want something else to scratch that stuff itch. Even if you don't fall to the allure of the new, you may not be living appropriately elsewhere. The average American person spends $232 a month eating out. $232 a month. So for a family of four, that's $928 a month, or over $11,000 a year. Is there anything wrong with eating out? Not at all. It's a fantastic blessing for us. But if you're spending $11,000 on eating out, but you're not giving generously or saving wisely, then your priorities are probably wrong. And you could have taken out the world probably there. So if you want to start living appropriately, then any money expert will give you the exact two same pieces of advice. Firstly, track your expenses, and secondly, make a budget. Doing these two things drastically helps you to live more appropriately. The reason most of us don't live appropriately is not because we intentionally go out to live extravagantly to spend more than we earn. We just don't keep track of what we're doing and we don't have a plan. You track your expenses by literally writing down every penny that you spend, whether that's in an old school paper ledger, on a spreadsheet, or on an app on your phone. And you make a budget by pre-deciding each month how you're going to spend the money for that month. If you want to start living appropriately, then doing these two things will help you significantly. Give generously, save wisely, live appropriately. We do these three things not as some legalistic act to spoil the fun we can have with our money. We do them because we know that our true joy isn't to be found in money or the stuff that money can buy. Our true joy is found in being a blessing to the world with our money, which in turn stores up for us treasures in heaven, which will bring us joy for all eternity. And when we pursue this greater joy in God, then we will be making him look so great. We will be glorifying him just like we're created to do. And when we live like we're created to live, then we will experience the best life ever. So as we've been doing for the last few weeks, we're going to take some time to consider how we can begin to grow in this area of our finances. So you'll have one of these in your bulletin, or if there's not one in your bulletin, they're in the seat pockets near you. And we're going to consider how we can grow by considering these three areas: our envisioned future, our current reality, and our specific commitments. And this week, I want us to consider these three things in the context of that framework to give generously, save wisely, and live appropriately. So I can have the next slide up, please. For your envisioned future, I want you to consider, how would you want your generous giving to look over the next few months and years? How much would you want to be giving? What would you be saving towards? How much money would you be saving? And what would your lifestyle look like to be living appropriately? We're going to play some music, and you have a couple of minutes to do that now. Okay, let's look at the current reality. The questions for this one: what does your current giving look like in and out of the church? What is your attitude toward giving? What does your current saving look like? What is your attitude toward saving for both the short and the long term? And what does your current spending lifestyle look like? Take a couple moments, begin drafting that current reality now. Going to make some specific commitments. The questions are: how much are you going to start giving? How much will increase your giving every 6 months or every year? Will you set up automated giving to help you be faithful? How much are you going to begin saving towards short-term and long-term needs? Do you need to seek advice to this well? How are you going to grow at living appropriately? Will you make a budget? Will you track expenses? Take some time and make some specific commitments for yourself now.
Change your plan, and I know any second you could take my pain away.
even if you don't, I pray. Help me want the healing more than the healing. Help me want the
Sorry, you don't have a whole lot of time to work on those. But I encourage you to continue to do so and to talk about that more with your spouse or with some close friends. Because the truth is that God has chosen to use our money to accomplish his work in the world. When we get on board with that, we are not only going to experience the best life ever, we're going to be preparing to experience the best eternity ever. And I want to leave you with the words of Jesus that we started with. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Let's be those who only serve one master, the one true God, and use the money that he so graciously provides to serve him more and more. We're going to sing a song as a, almost as a commitment at the end. It's called, I Will Give You All My Worship. And we're singing that to God. So let's stand and say to God, we're not going to worship money anymore. I will give you all my worship.